The Abbasids, who were much more tolerant than the Umayyads, and they dropped the total war policy because the Umayyads had a war policy. I mean, they believed in this idea that it's historical destiny, that Islam has to conquer the entire planet. And they basically destroyed their empire in attempting that. It imploded. I mean, they just expanded too quickly, too far, too fast, and it imploded. And the Abbasids, recognizing the fallacy of that argument, adopted a much more tolerant. And this comes also from the Barmekids, who were Afghanis, who came from an extremely tolerant background, who were the dominant ministers. And they had been Buddhist prior to being Muslim. The Barmekid family was a famous priestly family in Afghanistan. And they adopted a much more tolerant position of dealing with conquered peoples. And that goes all the way up to 1258 with the fall. And the Mughals were initially very barbaric, but became quite civilized. And they also had extremely tolerant policies. The Ottomans topped them all. The Ottomans did not have a conversion policy. They did not in any way proselytize Islam as a state religion. Really, they did not. It was not policy to proselytize to non-Muslims. They literally left them. They were called milal. And the millet, they left them, they had their own court systems. And this came from the hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ was asked by the Jews to judge between them. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, you know, كَيْفِ يُحَكِّمُونَكَ وَفِيهِمَ التَّوْرَةِ وَعِندُهُمَ التَّوْرَةِ فِيهَا حُكْمَ اللَّهِ. How can they come to you and ask you to judge between them? And they have the Torah. And in it is the rule of Allah. So Allah aqarra in the Qur'an. He actually says that the Jews have their Torah and they should not use the Quran as their source of judgment unless they become Muslim. And for that reason, the Ottomans had courts for the Jews in which the rabbis did their own rulings and the Christians had their own courts. And the Ottomans did not get involved unless it was penal. In the same way that in this country we have what's called people's courts. If people agree on private arbitration, they can actually do that. And that's a good aspect of this country. Whereas with penal, if you get into outside of civil code and into criminal code, then the state takes its authority. And it was similar in the Ottoman Empire. As long as it was civil, it was left to the millet to decide their own rulings. And that is, according to some researchers, where the West actually got that. Because Henry Stubbs, who was an expert on Ottoman policies of toleration, was contemporaneous with Hobbes, who introduces the idea of, and Henry Stubbs felt that the toleration of the Ottomans, if the Europeans adopted it, it would solve the problem of religious wars. And then from Hobbes, you get Locke, who writes the famous Treatise on Toleration, which becomes the pillar of American freedom of religion, because America has probably the first Freedom of Religious Act, which is from the 17th century in Maryland, is quite radical, although it's very consistent with the Ottoman tradition. And then obviously the founding fathers were very wary of having any state religion, and they felt that all religions, including Islam, and they mention it, Thomas Jefferson mentions it very clearly, that Muslims should have the right to worship. And John Adams says that not only should they have the right to worship, but we should prevent religious tests in order to prevent other religions from actually being in public office. So this is part of the early American history. So where then did the spread of Islam come? It usually came from individuals, the people that are called the Muhsinin, and particularly from people that were associated with what were later termed the Sufiya. These people had probably, and there's a book called The Role of the Sufis in the Spread of Islam. Anybody who's from the Indian subcontinent or Pakistan knows that the spread of Islam is directly related to famous awliya, they call them awliya, who came into that country, and just by their presence and by their spiritual states, many, many people became Muslim. And this is also true like Bosnia. It's very well known that the Ottomans did not have a policy on the Bosnians, and it was the Qadiri Sufi order and the Beshti Sufi order that went up into the mountains and began to call these people to Islam, because they were always very active in proselytizing Islam. Now, one of the things about the people of Tasawwuf, traditionally, in the Muslim world, is that they were known for their tolerance. They're people that were less condemnatory, less judgmental, which is obviously why they were very successful in calling other people to Islam. I'll give you an example. Habib Omar bin Mahfoud, who's a Yemeni scholar and has a madrasa in Tarim, an American was studying with him, and he said, if you want to call people in America to Islam, then it's based upon a condition that whoever you talk to, you see them as better than you. And he said, and the reason for that is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَمَا كُنَّ مُعَذِّبِينَ حَتَّى نَبْعَثَ رَسُولًا. We do not punish people until we send them a messenger. And so those people who have not heard the message of Islam have an excuse with their Lord for whatever they're doing. Whereas any of your disobedience, you have no excuse. And so that is a different way of looking. Instead of looking at people with contempt, you actually look at them with compassion. Instead of seeing them as your enemies, you see them as your potential friends and brothers. And that's what the Quran says, عَسَى اللَّهُ أَنْ يَجْعَلَ بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ عَدَيْتُم مِّنْهُم مَوَدَّةٌ وَاللَّهُ قَدِيرٌ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ. Perhaps God will put between those that you now feel animosity or enmity towards, put between you and them love. And Allah is all-powerful, and Allah is forgiving and merciful. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He said to the Prophet, لَيْسَ لَكَ مِنَ الْأَمْرِ شَيْءٍ, you have nothing to do with this. If Allah wants to guide them or forgive them, that's His business. In other words, the people that were treating him the worst at that time, because when he saw his uncle Hamza mutilated, he swore an oath that he would mutilate 70 people from amongst them, because he was a messenger of God, but he was also a human being. And even though we believe that he was ma'asum, his nature is impeccable, he was a human being, and he felt things very strongly. He wept. When he saw suffering, it caused him to move inside. He wept tears when he saw pain. He visited a sick man once, and because the man was suffering, he began to weep. And when the Sahaba saw ra'u buka'ahu bako jami'an, when they saw his weeping, they all began to weep. And that was from visiting a sick man. So he was a human being. When he saw his uncle, who he knew who his uncle was, Hamza, Sayyid al-Shuhada, had been mutilated on the battlefield, he said, وَاللَّهِ لَأُمَثِّلَنَّ سَبْعِينَ مِنْهُمْ. Allah said, you have nothing to do with this. If Allah wants, He'll guide them. And He did. He guided both of them, Hind and Wahshi.